It's time for the Ship Report, the show about all things maritime. I'm Joanne Rideout. It's Thursday, March 24th, 2022. On today's ship schedule, we have 6 inbounders, 5 outbounders, and 8 ships anchored off Astoria. In our marine weather forecast, we have north winds 10 to 15 knots, wind waves from the north 2 feet high at 4 seconds apart, and west swells 6 feet high at 11 seconds apart. And today we're going to talk about the one-year anniversary yesterday of the grounding of the container ship Ever Given in the Suez Canal, and what this anniversary tells us about the future of world trade. So we'll talk about that in just a minute, but first, let's take a look at our Columbia River ship schedule. Inbounders, we have the Edward Oldendorf. She came into the river very early, around 1:30 a.m. past Astoria, arriving from South Korea, headed to the Longview Anchorage, and she'll be picking up logs at Longview eventually. She'll get to the anchorage there at about 5 a.m. The articulated tug and barge rig, the Sounder Alliance, arriving from Ferndale, headed for Portland, bringing in refined petroleum past Astoria around 2:30 a.m. and got to Portland by about 8:30 this morning. In our outbounders, a couple of interesting ships today. The USNS Henry J. Kaiser, leaving Portland from the shipyard at Swan Island. She is a military sea lift command replenishment oiler. She left there at about 7:30 this morning, passing Astoria around 1:30 p.m. A replenishment oiler is a ship that can run alongside another ship at sea, put a hose across between them, and refuel them while they are moving along in the ocean at sea speed. So this is a very unusual kind of vessel. She is a military sea lift command ship, as I said, and she is probably that battleship gray color. She is owned by the Navy but staffed by civilian mariners, and she is one of a number of military sea lift command ships that come into the Columbia. And next outbound, we have the Pacific Collector. She's a ship that is home ported here in the Columbia, leaving Portland from the shipyard at Swan Island also. But she is a Department of Defense missile radar detecting ship. So she has these big radar arrays on her deck that look like giant golf balls. And so it's a very unusual looking ship, but she patrols an area of the northeastern Pacific here, patrolling, using her radar to detect missiles. So leaving around 8:30 a.m. from the shipyard at Swan Island. She'll probably pass Astoria outbound around 2:30 p.m. Well, today I wanted to share an interesting editorial with you from a new maritime news site, at least new to me, that I discovered recently. It's called Splash 24/7. This editorial was written by Sam Chambers. He's a writer who has had a long career as a maritime journalist. Among his credentials, he was editor of Maritime Asia magazine, as well as the East Asia editor for Lloyd's List, the world's oldest newspaper. His work has also appeared in The Economist, The New York Times, The Sunday Times, and the International Herald Tribune. This editorial was published yesterday online at splash247.com. So let me share it with you. It's about a ship whose name we all know, a ship whose grounding in the Suez Canal set a new standard for ship mishaps and supply chain problems. I'll read you part of it. On this day 1 year ago, a giant vessel approached the Suez Canal in windswept conditions, sand whipping up across the banks of the 193-kilometer, that's about 120 miles, strip of water connecting Asia with Europe. The infamous Ever Given would end up aground, straddling the waterway, and for the next 6 days, shipping was thrust into the mainstream limelight like never before, providing countless memes and hours of dissection on rolling news channels. More than 350 ships backed up in a queue behind the Ever Given, and some vessels even took an unusual detour down around the Cape of Good Hope, that's the southern tip of Africa. The legal tussle that would ensue once the ship had been freed would cost hundreds of millions of dollars, and the accident would force the Suez Canal Authority to kick off a widening project for the southern portion of the canal. One pundit wrote, quote, "Never in the field of global shipping has one ship ever given so much entertainment and laughs. The grounding of the ultra-large container ship made a splash in global news and drew an equally big response online as people rushed to their meme-making apps and cracked open a smile," unquote. But looking at its significance to global supply chains 1 year on, Alex Hersham, the CEO of the digital freight forwarder Zen Cargo, commented this, quote, "Whilst this memeable six-day event led to immediate delays, with ships queuing for miles to get into ports and rerouting to deliver goods, the long-term damage to international supply chains from this and other events became apparent in the coming months," unquote. Hersham also said that the grounding showed once and for all how sensitive the supply chain is to disruption of any kind. Now, shipping has had to contend with many other supply chain blockages in the intervening months, not the least COVID outbreaks in China and record-breaking queues outside American ports, and currently the fallout from the Russian invasion of Ukraine. In an act of nautical coincidence, another ship operated by Evergreen, the unfortunately named Ever Forward, finds itself the center of attention to rolling news channels off the east coast of the U.S., as a salvage operation gets underway to dislodge the ship, which grounded off Chesapeake Bay 10 days ago, unquote. And that ship we talked about earlier this week on the Ship Report. So that's from an editorial by maritime journalist Sam Chambers. It was published on the Splash247.com maritime news website yesterday. It's a really interesting website, by the way, if you're interested in maritime news, kind of like an alternative to gcaptain.com. But at any rate, the takeaway from this anniversary, one of them at least, is that the world economy is far from recovered from its pandemic-induced supply chain woes, and problems with very big ships running aground, or indeed anything that causes a slowdown, has shown us how sensitive this supply chain is. It's like a spider web that vibrates all over when something touches it anywhere. It's a sign that we're looking at some kind of new normal. It has not coalesced yet. I saw a sign of it in my own life this week, and maybe you have examples of your own of things that you were trying to get and just had a lot of difficulty finding them. I'm trying to order some fittings I need for my boat, kind of specialized stuff made by a company in Italy. I finally talked with a distributor in Massachusetts this week. The sales rep sent me this in an email, quote, "We don't have those parts, but I can probably special order them for you. We could get them with our next container, but the lead time will probably be several months. I might be able to get them shipped over for you, but there would be additional cost. Unfortunately, I don't know of anyone else in the States who might have these. Perhaps try Weems and Plath," unquote. So this is a relatively small company that has maybe one container on an entire container ship. So they can't hire their own ships like Walmart or Home Depot. And when there are container ship slowdowns, companies like this just have to wait, sometimes months. So I will check with Weems and Plath. They're a great old company that makes brass barometers. I have one and I love it. They make other lovely things like that. But I'm betting they won't have them. So I will likely look around here locally for some kind of alternative to make that work. Now, not the end of the world and certainly a first world problem, but it certainly is a different story from 2 years ago when they would have just ordered them and had them in 2 weeks max. You've been listening to The Ship Report, the show about all things maritime. I'm Joanne Rideout. Thanks for listening and have a great day.